Good afternoon, everybody. It's Tuesday, January 29, 2019. We are convened for the Legal Counsel Update in the Board of County Board of County Commissioners Conference Room. We need an extra couple C's in there so I can get more tongue-tied. So we have the full contingent of the board here and legal counsel, and our first item is draft order 2019-013 in the matter of authorization for a lease agreement with ZCS Inc. for lease of county property and lease agreement.
Yes, this proposal dates to last year, looks like around summer of last year. I don't think Commissioner Fowler has had the opportunity to get briefed on this yet, and so I can basically take it from the top.
Just a summary, yeah?
Yep, I can just quickly summarize and then field any questions from any member of the board as they may arise. County was approached by the company ZCS, which is an engineering and design firm, from what I understand. They're expanding in the downtown portion of Grants Pass, which is certainly something we like to see. The county is the owner of the nearby parking lot. ZCS approached the county through its property management program and asked about renting on a monthly basis 10 spaces, which are identified, I believe, in the attachment to the lease.
I'll need to share that.
Yes, they are. Yep. And so is that clear what I'm talking about? Everyone,
I'm just going to see the streets.
This is D, and this,
that's this is in the...
there's D.
Like the...
Fifth and E.
Juror parking lot. Mm-hmm.
Right. Currently used by jury parking. And Ryan Johnson was planning to be here. He's not here. I can sort of summarize what I think his feedback is.
That is the...
And they're currently not being used for something.
Well, they are being... That's the, I guess, concern on the part of our facilities maintenance. He's... I don't know if I can really summarize him.
I don't think
his position too well. I know he objects, put it that way.
The jury doesn't use that whole parking lot anyway, do they? Nah. When they're full tilt.
It'd be rare.
Rare.
Yeah.
Rare. Yeah. Whether they have ever used it, couldn't vouch either way. But right. I would characterize it as rare. So Helene did some car counting, which I can present the numbers here to you. So she said that there are 79 total jury lot parking spaces, 73 total spaces. On September 18th of last year at 8 a.m., there were 3 cars. September 25th, there were 14 cars at 1 p.m. On October 23rd at 8.05 a.m., there were 33 cars. And then today at 9.10 a.m., there were 39. And that's out of the 73.
Okay, I was going to say, if it's Tuesday's their big
hit. Tuesday's their big
hit. That's correct.
Because yeah. That's when everybody,
so it's still only
they're all here on
above,
Tuesday.
Barely above half.
Yes, yeah. That's what our counting has revealed.
Cool.
And so, if Ryan's here, yeah, here it is. Okay. I've been skipping over the parts that I told him you object, but I didn't.
Oh, okay.
That's all I said for you.
So, for the record,
sure.
Ryan Johnson, facilities director. We put a request into facilities to get that chair fixed, so I'm sorry.
Miss Helen, so I can sit in.
We would normally call right. You up, but we waited till you.
So now you know what we're dealing
that
with
might
when
expedite
that request
it.
Comes by your desk. Yeah. It wasn't intentional. I didn't know you were coming.
Wasn't a setup.
All right. Good deal.
What's your stance on these
funny.
Spaces?
I don't care about that.
Well, in the past, we've had different businesses around the area always inquire about leasing spaces from our parking lot or adjoining lots. And we've always denied it because when there's big jury trials, the courts always felt that they needed that parking. And they used to actually pay the county annually for that parking lot.
So maybe they still should so they can have a say over what they're prohibiting somebody else to do. But if they're not willing
that
to pay
be.
For it.
Yeah.
So they're not paying right now.
No.
They are not paying right no. now.
If I may. So, Ryan, do you know if any verbal arrangements, assurances, understandings have been created with us in the courts regarding any portion of this lot?
My conversations with the former trial court administrator was that, you know, it would still be exclusively use for jury parking. I don't know how the current TCA feels about that. So, this morning the lot was full. It was packed. So if we had leased 10 spots, those 10 people would have been looking for parking elsewhere.
Hmm. Where'd we get that
number from
Nine. I was out there.
We had 18 this morning or something.
Yeah, Elaine counted 39 at 9:10 a.m.
Okay.
39 spaces out of 73.
Okay. But, I was by there. That was about 8 o'clock this morning. It was full.
That's when the jury selection starts there.
At 8 o'clock.
Orientation starts at 8. That's going to be the maximum.
And then by 9, they move some people over. So I was on jury sometime in the last 6 months. And fortunately got to the case and I didn't get selected because I had to announce that I knew every party involved in the case. But, I mean, we were packed that day. Ann Basker was packed that day. And they took over. I mean, it was enough to fill courtroom one on one side and three or four aisles on the next aisle of individual jurors. So it was quite an extensive amount of folks. But I think I would want to know for certain what's in agreement because they're not paying for the spaces and parking is an issue in our area. The other implication I would ask is when Transient gets their hub across the street, what's the impact going to be on that street parking going away that's used on that block? Because that's additional spaces that will disappear when the Transient hub starts getting built.
Well, this overhead shows four people parked there right now.
Okay. Oh, you have an overhead?
And a lot of times when that parking lot gets full, it'll bleed over into staff parking, the other parking lot over by the archive building. We are looking at enclosing part of the lot behind the IT archive building at some point. So that'll also limit overflow parking.
Is this ECS here? That little house on the corner? Where is ECS?
ZCS has got to be
over on this side.
Over here.
Over here.
Yeah.
Is that okay? I got it. That's in those buildings they're remodeling now. Okay. Got it.
How do we know if they're not using them now?
They probably
are. ZCS isn't there yet.
Oh, okay.
Who's enforcing? Oh, they're not moving yet?
No, they're building a new building over there by 115 Broiler.
That's whose building that is?
It's going to be VCS right in there.
So and they're looking for parking for their new building.
And they're looking
for parking. Well, they just built over a parking lot. They should have reconsidered that, shouldn't they have?
There's no standards in the downtown.
That's brothers that built over the parking lot.
Yep. Well,
maybe not.
Maybe we could delay this and ask the courts what their numbers are and why they're not paying.
Yeah, I know they had a jury fund that they were using, and that got reallocated for different type things, but I think Trina should probably speak to it. I know the former TCA would be real adamant about keeping that designated, but you know, I can go either way. I'm just historically wanted to let you know what was done.
What is the parking lot between D and C? Behind the IT building, who is utilizing that?
Staff, mainly, and county vehicles.
Does it say county vehicles only?
No, it doesn't.
No, it's an open
So it's an open parking lot.
And
that's why you can see the IT building there, or
this is an
archive building. Yeah, right there we were looking at fencing, possibly, because there's a lot of vehicles like surveyors and EOC that just sit in that lot for long periods of time over the weekend, and they're unprotected. So we're going to fence, and then that hardens that site as well a little bit back where the generator and stuff is. So we would lose a few spots for general parking.
I'm assuming that they've exhausted. There's a parking lot right over here. Here's the archive building. Right over here, there's another parking lot there.
That's the one I'm referring to. And
law
he just
enforcement.
Said
or no, there's a lawyer in there. Isn't there's a law office in there?
No, there's nothing in that block behind. It's just the IT building and the church.
No, I'm going
right
the other way.
Towards 6th Street.
Across
if you hop
way.
Across the street.
Oh, my apologies.
There is another parking lot over there, and it's private parking.
It's behind the old funeral home.
Right. Behind the funeral home, and maybe that one.
That's their jurisdiction. That's
it's gated.
Yeah, Tim Cummings has ownership of that.
Then maybe they ought to be dealing with Tim Cummings for 10 spots.
Because that parking lot's pretty open.
I've never seen it.
I've never seen any cars in it.
Yeah, it's been very few.
And for our department, you know, not that we're doing constant work over there, but we would have to facilitate with a third party about moving cars and stuff whenever we're striping or blowing leaves. Not that it's a big deal. Right. But I believe it's only, we're looking at like $250 a month. yep. for those 10 spots?
Yep. I'm not seeing. I thought we were looking at matching what the city charges for parking.
That's pretty minimal.
I don't mean to be $25. I don't mean to be mean spirited, but there hadn't been a whole bunch of striping going on there in a long time. So, I just have.
It's all newly striped.
Hmm?
It's newly striped.
Newly striped.
Newly striped.
Patina.
Patina.
I just have concerns because we're getting ready to open up another courtroom where we already have. So that's going to put even more strain on that for the jury.
Yeah.
But I'd like to see us get some revenue out of it. From the
yeah, every time I see that opportunity, I want to jump on. But like I said, maybe we ought to break for a week or two and ask them to ask Pacific Living Centers, I think, is the owner of that building.
Who owns the dirt pad
between where the transit thing's
the, where the transit hub is going in, that corner, who owns the dirt portion of that lot between D and the alley?
I think we own both.
Between
yeah, we own both.
The county owns both. Both ours.
County owns both.
Okay.
Both those properties are going to be in the hub.
In the hub.
Right. And that
the two.
But half of those aren't going to be used for the hub, are they not? It's only going to be about half, or is the whole lot?
I think it's the whole lot.
Because you're talking, there's like four bus turn-ins.
Yeah.
I haven't seen the plan.
Two on each side of the alley. And
yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be, they're going to take up every inch of that. Mm-hmm.
And the lease is a month-to-month, is that?
Yes, 30 days.
Because maybe we let them park there on a month-to-month basis until the bus
until
thing gets
they start
going.
Building. Yeah. The other thing to think about is just pushing them to the city in the F Street lot. The city sells passes on the F Street lot.
Yeah, right now it's still open parking. They could sell some passes, but they're not even charging Dutch Bros for it yet. They sure should,
okay, in
my opinion.
So for now, we don't want to give up the spots because we don't know what's going to happen with the courts. We should get some feedback from Trina.
I think we're it's under consideration, but we need more information.
Okay. Yeah.
That makes sense.
And should we sort of open a discussion with the courts about some revenue coming to the county?
I think this is the
if
time.
They want them reserved, then they need to account for them. But then we also have to, are they going to require us to monitor it and enforce the parking, and who does that?
They didn't in the past. They just had to use the funds somewhere else. So we treated it just like any other lot as far as policing it and so forth.
Yeah, I'd like to know the history, like when that stopped. If it was 10 years ago or 3 years ago.
I want to say 2 years ago.
Not too long ago?
Not too long ago.
So we should ask before it gets too far away then.
The money that was given to the county for that was put into the jury rooms. So it's not like there wasn't upgrades done to the building.
All right.
Okay. Okey-doke.
I'm okay with that.
It's a table. More information.
Table.
We'll engage the courts.
Well,
CCS updated.
And this is a good time to open the conversation with the courts because they say we've had an offer for a lease on 10 of those spots. Why shouldn't we take it?
That's where we're at. I'm not trying to be tough.
We brought to our attention.
It's nice of us to maintain the parking lot for them to all park in, but.
Okay, so moving on to item number 2 is a draft quit claim deed to Aaron Beckford for purchase of county real property located at the state line.
Yes, it is. Sizable property that sold at the last auction, and Mr. Beckford has paid, right? He must have.
Yes.
That's what he did. And so, as it is with any piece of property, it can be transferred only pursuant to a deed. Everyone knows, because of all the paperwork that we inundate our buyers with, that it's a quitclaim deed. And so that is what the board is being presented for its consideration here.
Okay, so I'd entertain a motion to approve the quitclaim deed.
So moved.
And seconded.
Without taking it to business
and session.
Do we need to?
Usually do that at a business session.
I thought we signed them here.
Well, so
my
bad.
Never mind. Take back your motion.
I withdraw my session.
We can send Helene up there. She can say you get
$100,000.
It's a big success from the
Okay.
Typically, it is done at the business session.
Got it. My bad.
Makes sense.
Sorry.
WBS.
Okay. There's no law against doing it here. But
just take a second.
You're right. It's the ones when we approved to sell after the... All right, no worries. Yeah. I just thought we approved them here. So that's fine. We'll move on. So item number three is draft personal service contract with Sustainable Leadership Consultants. This is the folks that are going to be doing the February 20th and 21st event with us with the goal setting and such. They sent their own version of a contract. This is legal's version of putting the item in our language. So this is what we created. And have we sent it to them to see if they have comments?
No, not yet. So wanted to get the okay from the board first. I think, as I recall, I think their proposal is supposed to be attached as Exhibit A, but I might be getting everything mixed up.
It's not here.
Okay. I'll double check
on that. And honestly, this is something at the level of money that it was that I could have signed. It didn't need the full board's authorization to sign the contract, correct?
Money-wise, yes, but...
The public contracting code calls for a department head signature as opposed to a single commissioner signature.
Yeah.
And so to remain compliant with that provision, we've always said, okay, it's either... Well, we haven't really... Unless the full board authorizes one member of the board to sign contracts, it's just been the department head. And if it goes over $15,000,
and
then
that's the chair 10, is technically the department head.
So that's technically something you can do if you want.
But I mean, for budget and all the other, they're the one who do the role of the department head.
I think you've always tried to avoid making it look like you're taking a unilateral.
Oh yeah, no, but even reaching out to them was given the permission of the board in the first place to go that route. So the board had already previously authorized us to go down this route. So I just want to make sure it's done as soon as possible because we're under a time frame to get this done. And at the letter, I mean, as they sent it last month. And I lost it. So it was like, I just want to make sure that we...
Book them.
Yes. Because they're ready to send out emails to department heads to get the pre-surveys done because they're going to work right away and they were going to be doing that next week. So
this is eight total?
Not to exceed eight. Yep.
Eight's the cost.
I would say probably the board just comes to consensus that Commissioner Morgan is the signatory on part of the county and that's...
For this subject, not all subjects.
Right.
On this one, yeah, exactly.
They take an action today.
Yeah. Or we can just make a motion to approve the contract today, and we can all three sign it. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, it says you can approve services right here.
Yeah.
But they haven't seen it yet.
Say what?
Yeah.
It says, contract administrator, the chair of Josephine County Board, item number two, shall be the contract administrator, have the authority to request, oversee, and approve the services.
Yes.
Which I'm assuming includes the contract.
No.
It is
an
old
contract to have her sign it.
Okay. Which is probably a good idea.
I make a motion to have Commissioner Morgan sign the contract.
I'll second that.
Any further discussion?
No.
All those in favor say aye.
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 Okay, we'll revise the contract and then get it to you.
Yeah.
And then you can send it over to them for signature?
Or let's just revise. I mean, we want to get it done as soon as possible.
Okay.
Yeah. So they've been asking me what the status is, and I said it was on the agenda this afternoon.
Okay.
So.
Yep.
Awesome. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Item number four is draft personal service contract with Julie Schmelzer, and J.J. Schofield is joining us. I did get an email from Julie with her thoughts on this because she had not seen it prior to me emailing it to her this morning. She didn't know if we cared one way or the other as far as if her employment continued part-time or the contract. But she said that since she's representing the county on economic development items, that she thinks the county should pay those registrations and allow her to use the work card. Otherwise, she was in agreement with what was in the contract.
Okay. So just an
I
adjustment
seen
to
this,
the contract.
So I'm going to scroll down.
You asked a question about...
Why did we do this versus keep it part-time for 6 months like we had said?
typically when we've had department managers come back, we've made them independent contractors. The advantage of doing that is you limit the potential cost. Part-time folks, when you class them as part-time, if they go travel somewhere, you have to pay travel time. And so there's a more known cost if it's just a setup as a contract. The other advantage of that is it limits your workers' comp liability and other liabilities, having them as an independent contractor.
It doesn't, in other words, if she was still an employee, you'd still have to provide health benefits and...
You wouldn't have to provide health care because she's not a full-time employee, but you'd have to provide workers' comp coverage.
Okay. Now, let me ask a question, because when I was in business, I had anybody that I contracted with had to show me proof that they were paying compensation on workman's comp on themselves. State industrial accident and all of that on themselves or their employees.
If they are an autonomous licensed business, they have to. But you're not required to do that as an independent contractor.
Okay. Right. Just want to check on that.
So sure what that. Besides car usage was her concern?
Well, and this doesn't say anything about economic development in here either, which is what we had said that she was going to continue to do for the next 6 months.
Yeah, so, I said community development projects. I wasn't sure if that was the same as economic.
And that's not what we had said. But the other thing is why is it limiting to 1 day a week after months 3 through 6? We also didn't say that. So I guess I'm just kind of curious where these terms came from. So I'll read her email again. I am representing the county at economic development events. I think the county should pay for those registrations and allow her to use the work car. Otherwise, this looks good. So I don't... There was a portion in here that looked odd, travel. Why is it a question? Do I use the county vehicle? Is that part of the 2 days' time, etc.? I think every circumstance, I mean, if she's going somewhere on behalf of the county or attending something on behalf of the county, we do cover travel.
Where are you in this contract?
I am looking at
page
1.
I mean, you're just
one.
Rattling on at about 800 miles an hour. You're way past my hearing aid.
I had two
capability.
Coffee cups today. I'm sorry. My
hearing aid
one,
gave up about 10 miles an hour.
So on page 1 of the contract, there is a portion in my online version that is highlighted yellow under section 3.4 travel. It's a question. So this...
Okay, got it. I know where you're at. Mine's not in yellow.
Under 3.2 hours was where it's 2 days a week for the first and second months and then 1 day per week for the third through 6 months. I think that part of us saying stay part-time was that we needed this to be flexible and not so strict as, okay, it's going to be 2 days a week for these times, then it's going to go, you know, it's kind of like, well, what are our needs? Because she was going to be working with Commissioner Fowler as needed to develop what recommendations we were talking about with economic development, different stuff. So, I don't know. I'm just kind of curious.
The genesis of those time frames is I spoke with Julie about what projects she was going to do and the timelines for them, and plus just the obligation she has with Curry County, and she voiced that she thought it was beneficial to have more time in the first couple months and then taper off a bit for the last few months. It doesn't have to necessarily be 1 day, but on average 1 day at month 3 through 6, and on average a couple days. I mean, it could even be like, I don't remember which commissioner said it, but it could be a couple days every other week or 1 day a week, you know, but on average about a day a week for the following months. I know she did have a question. I spoke to her last night about travel. So I didn't know. I haven't seen the contract, so I didn't know if that was in it. Allowing.
I haven't seen travel addressed at all. It's a draft that doesn't describe it.
I know
I wasn't sure what the board wanted to do for travel, so that's why I just put her question in there. And
that's because this didn't originate with the board. We didn't ask for a contract, so we didn't know to present that option.
Yes. And it depends upon when we brought people back, what they're doing, whether we would include it or not. In her case, part of what she'll be doing is going to different sites that deal with grow sites, and she wanted the ability to use a county vehicle for that.
So my opinion is that if she's traveling to get here, we don't cover that.
Mm-hmm.
If she's here and traveling on our behalf, then we would cover that.
I agree.
Me too.
Yes, sir.
I'm looking at item number 5.1, item number 2, and I'm doing the math in my head.
I think she can get here on her own.
That's right. What I just said.
Yeah.
I know. I'm just, you asked me it's what I'm thinking, and I just told you what I'm thinking. I could have said none of your business, but I didn't. I said, I'm just looking at item number two, and I think she can get here by herself.
Yeah.
But I agree with what you said. I'm okay with that.
And if the board would prefer not to go this route, we can make her a temporary part-time employee. A little more cumbersome because she has to track her time, and there are some potential costs that would increase that method over this method. But assuming those things don't happen, it's a fairly similar cost.
I like the contract better, I think, with a set amount of money.
And it seems that she does.
No, that's fine.
Is there any way we could add...
We just have to make sure to account for the economic development that's not listed. Unless that falls under community development because we kept it under the department for now.
We can make it clear. It's pretty easy to just add.
Mm-hmm. I can change that.
Yeah. Because when I talked to her yesterday, because we weren't quite finalized with the contract, because Leah wanted to ask you all a couple questions, one about travel. So we weren't ready to say, here it is, because we didn't know what you guys thought on travel. Okay. And I told Julie we would talk today, finalize some of those questions, and then give it to her.
Okay. Well, and it sounds like she's only asking about travel and her duties here, not asking for some compensation.
That's what she is talking about. She wants the ability to use a county vehicle while she's doing county work.
And that the county would cover any costs of registration related to her doing. But I would ask that any participation in events that would take registration be flown through Commissioner Fowler first. I'm not interested in her attending conferences on her behalf. No. I would rather...
Unless we had a look at it.
Yeah, I'd rather you go to the conference and learn, or whatever else.
Right, and she's, this whole thing is so that she can clean up loose ends, not start new projects.
Correct.
True, but she may have to represent at some...
So I guess that's my only question about that is conferences would be approved on a one-off basis.
We could put that in there. Mm-hmm.
She's taking notes right now. Mm-hmm. Well, and I'm wondering if there's a way to pay by the day or something in that third through 6 months. If there's something that requires extra work, are we able to utilize her? Or are we limited just one day a week?
Can she invoice for extra time?
Right. That's what I was wondering if there could be a provision for.
This contract, this amount covers one day per week for a third through 6 months. But if we, upon approval, she would
have additional days at this price.
In the contracting world, you call it an extra. In other words, it's an addendum to the contract, and you get that approved through the general contractor and the pay and who you're working for and everything.
So technically, if she worked a Saturday and Sunday for us, that's a day and 2 weeks because the work week starts on Sunday. So she would work a Saturday and a Sunday and one weekend, and that's 2 weeks covered. So it'd be 2 weeks later that she'd work.
I think it was me that brought up that she works 2 days every other week or something like that. You know, 2 days back to back because that way she's not coming over here. The whole thing is fluid. I mean, it's not like. Right.
Yeah, my only worry is we go throw it in a contract and this is now the law. And whereas, what if. I just want us to have the flexibility to get the job done. Yeah. And if it gets done sooner than later, great. Mm-hmm. It wasn't intended to necessarily go the full
it's
6 months. It was a matter of let's get the job identified, let's get the recommendations of where we're going next and go from there. So,
but I do like the aspect that if she needs more time upon approval of the board, that she can invoice for that.
Mm-hmm. We can always amend the contract, too.
Is that a daily price? Something like that.
Okay.
Yeah, because then we could look at it at the end of the 2 days per week after the first 2 months and go, is it working? Are you done? Are you tapering off? And adjust it at that time.
Mm-hmm. Do you guys have the feedback you need as far as...
I think so, yeah.
So we can send it to her to sign, and then we'll sign?
Can we request progress report on the various projects to see what projects are you working on, and are you 60% done, 40% done?
Does that need to be listed in here? Because we already ordered her to work with Aaron and Mark Stevenson.
I can just ask her for that at the end of the 2 months.
Casual.
I don't think it has to be in the contract.
Okay.
Are you good, Leah? Pardon? You're good with what you need?
Yeah, I'm gonna. I'll go ahead and put something about progress reports in there too.
Just okay.
That'd be good. So we can at least kind of send some kind of idea as to what the sunset would be.
So okay. Number five is a personal service contract with the Jameson Group.
Yes.
Thanks.
Okay. Sorry. Well,
our package is empty now.
Yep. Okay. So this is the. That's fine. This is the lobbyist working on the BLM land exchange. The contract expired, the term of the contract expired on December 31st. I think we made a mention of that like last week or something when we talked about this. Mm-hmm. So since then, I've communicated with him. He said he'd go ahead and extend the contract to December 31st of this year. That wouldn't be an additional expense to the county. We're just going to amend the contract to have a term that it goes through December 31st, 2019. Gives him another year to...
Keep working on this.
Work under the same
money. So we're not asking for more money to continue just the contract as-is.
Yes.
Done.
I have no problem with that.
So, but you did run by the board to...
What would trigger him getting
that guy's name? That's a stand-up guy there.
What triggers is if and hopefully when the bill passes, then we will continue the contract with him for an additional period of 180, I think, days. To oversee the rulemaking process.
An additional $5,000, I think.
Yes, yeah, compensation for that period would be $5,000.
Right. Okay. For follow-up if it passes.
I think that's worth it because we will know then that it's going to work. And he's just just tying the knots up good.
Sure, yeah. And it's an important aspect of legislation is getting that rulemaking process. Okay, we'll get that taken care of, and I'll sign on behalf of the county.
Thank you.
Super.
Item number six is draft cooperative service agreement with USDA Wildlife Services. Is the cougar stuff?
It is the cougar stuff. Wanted to check back in. I think we discussed it last month, or maybe longer ago than that.
3 months?
Commissioner, it's been previously discussed. Commissioner DeYoung was going to engage ODFMW, I think, and... I just wanted to know whether there's been any movement on that.
No. I tried to get a hold of Marty. He's the state cop guy for... Oregon Department for the OSP and find out what is their obligation. They're collecting the money. So I have not done that. So
okay,
I will.
It's just checking back in on that one. All still in. I don't think Commissioner Fowler had a chance to weigh in on that.
Yeah, I don't know what we're talking about.
Well, we had a real
gonna happen
problem with cougars last summer. Because the deer moved down out of the hills because of the low water content, and when the deer move down, the cougars go with them. Right. Their food supply goes along. We had a lot of cougar
sightings,
livestock confrontations. They've greatly gone away now because the cougars have gone back up in the hills and the deer have all moved up and so on and so forth. So I haven't heard of any conflicts with farm animals recently. And it may be because...
Only with the
maybe
wolves
because,
in Jackson County? That's the only ones I've heard in the news lately.
Yeah. They don't. Well,
and we already have a contract of some sort?
We do not.
Is that draft service agreement?
We talked about a service agreement with, Jackson County's trapper and Douglas County.
No, they pay the program. And so there was the three options that we would...
We could lease...
Lease their program through the USDA and ODFW on each basis, or we can charge the individuals needing the help, or there was a couple options we were looking at, but the bigger question is, why is ODFW telling people this is the county's responsibility when they're the ones who collect tag fees for wild animal population
control?
They're
a game animal.
Game animal, yeah.
Cougars are a game animal. It would be different if it was something that wasn't a game animal that they're collecting fees to manage, and they're not.
So there was a couple citizens asking the county to step up and take care of the cougar issue, and yet it's the state and feds that manage the programs.
Well, and since then, has it not an issue?
No.
Right? Or is it going to be an issue next year?
It'll be an issue next year as it dries out and then the craters come down.
So what's the future?
There might be a question for our legislative body.
So goats and sheep and... small cattle and stuff, and maybe they wipe those all out. Maybe the food supply went away in the back of the deer.
Okay. So state police might not necessarily have a stance on that topic.
Who?
Marty in the state police, he has a very limited scope of what his thing is. This might be something we want to ask our legislators what the state rules are on that and what... Are you guys here for a specific topic?
I think so.
the jury.
Courthouse security.
Oh, courthouse security is coming up.
But I didn't realize you were back there. We probably would have invited you.
They just walked in.
Oh, okay. Okay, we were talking about you earlier.
Okay, sorry. Just this one might take a little bit of time. So item number 7 is rules for implementation of ordinance 2018-006, utility consumer choice.
And I was talking, and I'm sorry. So I guess the board's desire then is to continue to just have Commissioner DeYoung try to work it with ODFW on that issue.
Right.
And
yeah.
I'll work with Commissioner DeYoung.
Yes.
I
just need to put it back on my schedule.
Yep.
Yes,
okay.
Thank you.
Well, and I am curious why ODFW is telling our citizens it's the county's issue. That is a concern to me, that a state agency is doing that.
Right. We'll do what we can.
We'll put it back.
We'll get it done.
Back on the top of my list.
Thank you,
David.
Second top.
Okay, I'm ready.
Second top of my list.
Thank you.
All right, so utility consumer choice ordinance. Rules.
Yes, the rules. Hot off the press. So, and I'll hand Commissioner Fowler, the one that also goes to the record. There's a draft as labeled at the top.
Right.
Even I've identified as recently as today and this morning, some adjustments that will probably need to be made. Beecher from my office has been doing actual legwork on doing this. So I'm going to stop talking, give the board a chance to look at it, and then we can get to the discussion.
Administrative rules are not an ordinance, and so would this go before the weekly business session just approving an order?
Yes.
Or an order technically can be approved at any time.
Yes.
So it could be implemented today.
I don't recommend it. I
don't either.
I need to make
public hearing would be appropriate, but...
That is true. That is true. And I do need to make a couple of adjustments. I have to get some feedback from the board.
Okay.
It'll become clear once we get into the discussion. But
I would like to read this thing and
study. I don't know if anyone's seen it before. Is it appropriate that we put it on the agenda next week to discuss, or is there a time frame that we have these rules adopted that we need to deal with?
Well, Commissioner DeYoung's not going to be here on Thursday from what I gather. So we need to get these rolled out. The ordinance goes into effect today. And I don't.
What's Friday look like?
I'm actually in Salem on this case on Friday. Oh. That's when we're having our argument.
Well, I'm not going to be here tomorrow.
Right.
Okay, so I'm just going to suggest we take a second to look at Section 2. And see if we have any comments real quick. Okay, so economic hardship and the definition alone, and I'm breaking my own rule by looking back in Section 1A. We heard from several citizens who had multiple units on one property, and they may be able to make payments to food and clothing and shelter and water, but now all of a sudden are having 4 meter fees because they have 4 on the same property. $120 extra, or actually, no, that's $140 extra a month, was a couple of the cases for single properties. Do they still meet that economic hardship? Because, I mean, where it's multiple units versus normal ability to pay.
Okay.
I guess I'm trying to, I mean, circumstance of that it's per, I mean, there was a business on River Highway that had concern that they had multiple units in the property. There was a farm in Williams that talked about that. There was a business here in downtown Grants Pass that had multiple units. Where they have multiple meters because of the layout of the building, it could create a hardship because of the repeated fee over multiple meters.
And that's the reason that Section 1 says that each claim will be evaluated on a case-by-case basis, because it's, you can't, at least I can't, set up a set of rules that will apply to every case in every situation.
Yep.
So we're basically going to rely on this board to evaluate each application and make a decision. And everybody's going to get treated the same, but every case is going to be different because everybody's situation is going to be
different. They all have different merit.
Yeah.
However, exactly. The thing that stood out to me that caused me to go back and look at the definition was under Section 2, Section 2.1A3, that attests the accuracy and truthfulness of the information submitted on the claim form. Falsification of information on the claim form will be referred to the Office of District Attorney for prosecution for false swearing and unsworn falsification. So if it is subjective or objective, what the right word is, that each case by case is a hardship or not, how are we saying they falsified a form? That, to me, is going down a slippery slope of interest.
I mean, every case is going to be evaluated on its own merits, but we assume that everybody's going to tell us the truth. And if they don't tell us the truth, there has to be some penalty for that. It's up to you guys what you want to do, but if someone comes in and swears that their income is $800 a month and then walks out and gets into a Mercedes, don't you have some questions about that?
I have seen where there are wealthy people that are poor because of different circumstances, and your car does not define what your income
just
is.
Just an example.
But he was just using that as an example.
I hear you. But here's the thing, is that this wasn't about just the economic level of, it's not just the poor that are dealing with economic hardship of a related fee for people's choices of moving out. And if you have four units on a property, that does create a greater financial burden to an individual, where they may have income because they have four this or this and that, but that doesn't mean that it's not a hardship nonetheless. And so I guess I'm just, we said in that hearing that that it was a hardship to the individual, essentially, if I remember correctly. It wasn't about...
And again, it's going to be up to this board to make that determination.
Yeah.
I don't know any way. I mean, I'm perfectly happy to incorporate any guidelines you want to give me, but this is the best I could do to come up with a guideline on how these are going to be evaluated and how we're going to judge them. If you want to suggest other guidelines, I'm happy to incorporate those.
No, I don't have a suggestion. I mean, I'm processing out loud as I'm reading this. And I think part of it was just that, I mean, I remember supervising people that had their nails done by a stylist every 3 weeks, and they had an iPhone when they were $800 to purchase. And I'm like, how are you affording that? You're on TANF, you know, that kind of stuff. But they were able to afford it in their circumstance. And I couldn't, and I had a good job. So it was just kind of like, I think it's, when is it a hardship? And that's what they had asked in that hearing, is what if it is a hardship for me, even if I make money? You know, what is a hardship defined as?
Yeah, it's subjective.
Yeah. So that's my only concern, especially because, okay, you have a car, so therefore you can't have a hardship. So we're going to say you false swore that you had a hardship and refer charges to the district attorney's office.
No, I don't think I don't think we're going to ask anybody to swear that I have a hardship.
Nope.
We're going to ask them to supply information about what they own, how much they make, how much they have in the bank, and a great deal of personal information about their financial situation. And so if somebody says, I make $800 a month, and we determine that they, in fact, make $6,500 a month, that's probably false information.
Okay.
And that's probably should be referred to the DA for a decision.
They should have some language in there for that.
Yeah, right. That's exactly. The recourse language.
Yeah, just right. Have some language, some strong language that don't perjure yourself.
I guess that's me just questioning, well, you lied that you have a hardship. And
We're not asking anyone okay. to say under oath I have a hardship. We're asking them to provide specific information from which you guys can determine whether they have a hardship.
Right. And how is that person's disclosure of their information going to remain confidential so that it's not part of public information and that somebody can have some level of privacy in their personal financial situation so that they're comfortable bringing forward their situation?
We will maintain the information as confidential, and the form that we give them to fill out will specify that it is confidential unless it is ordered to be disclosed by a court order. We don't have any, we don't have any control over that. If we do get an order from the court to disclose the information, we can ask the court to allow us to redact the personal information that is listed in the statutes that make exceptions for public documents.
So public information requests and how the courts have a weigh in on that. This is not a public to me, this would be, how do we argue?
This is not subject to public disclosure. It's not public record. And we will resist disclosing it.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a confidential submission for purposes of public records requests. But in a court case, which is what this is all likely to wind up in, has wound up in, that's going to be a discovery request mm-hmm. for production. And so what Beecher was describing was how we would approach that request for production when it comes in to try to protect that information. But so we just had, this is the last discussion we had before coming into the meeting here today, and I mean, I really needed to get the board's input on that. First, I need to hear sort of some consensus that, yes, you do want this information to remain confidential, if that be the will of the board. And then, what's your comfort level? Because when it goes to court, this information could very well get in the hands of the opponent.
So, yes, I think it needs to be confidential. Otherwise, that's too vulnerable spot to ask people to submit their financial circumstance for all the public to see. I think it has to be confidential. As far as court disclosure...
Well, there are a few steps to consider. First of all, if someone requests a disclosure just as a public record, we will deny that. It's not subject to public record request. It's not subject to disclosure under those statutes. If they request disclosure, if the other party in this requests disclosure through the courts under a request of production, we would resist disclosing the documents and tell the other party that we will not disclose them unless we're ordered to do so by the courts. If it comes to a court hearing where it's possible that a court will order us to disclose it, we will ask the court to allow us to redact all of the personal information and provide simply the name and address, which the utility provider already has.
Okay.
So when we considered a claim... Would we do that in executive session? How do we keep that out of the public record?
That would yes, because there would be active litigation at that stage.
Okay, so it could fall under that.
Yes.
Okay.
I guess I would like to see some other opportunity of who approves these other than the Board of Commissioners. We don't have time to evaluate 85,000 residences if they were to apply.
Or even 1,000.
Yeah. And so
who would you
is
like
there
to
some
do
other
that?
Body that would be appropriate or appealable to the board or something like that, but
it's our ordinance.
It is, however. Mm-hmm.
We have to set up some or utilize some existing crew. That sounds dicey.
I think it should say that Commissioner DeYoung has to review everyone.
I think we should put it in Julie's contract.
Yeah. Wait, he used a joke from earlier.
You don't want me to punch a time clock for this job. So
no.
Anyway,
I'm just teasing.
I think the very first thing is on the customer. Very first charge is for the customer to say, okay, I have a hardship, and bring it to us. I don't think there's going to be 1,000 of these things come through our door. I really don't. I think there's going to be a handful of them, depending on how this thing goes statewide, because there's other counties that are interested in how this thing's panning out. I see some things here that I don't know how to reword them. You know, you're the legal guy, so I don't know how to reword them, but...
Just tell me what you want.
No, it just sounds to me that, you know, proving a hardship. You know, to somebody that just plain old doesn't want, they don't want the meter, they don't want the smart meter, whether it's a hardship or not.
It's customer choice.
They feel as though the charge of, I'll just throw this out, the charge of $36 a day or a month to read the meter, when there is a cost of doing business that Pacific Power went to the Public Utilities Commissioner and established their rate. They say we want 8.5 cents a kilowatt hour. And in that, if you were to look through their operating statement, there's going to be something there for data collection, which is reading the meter. So the cost of reading that meter is already in the 8.5 cents that they're collecting in their base rate. Yeah. And then to turn right around and say, okay, if you get a smart meter, we don't have to read that meter anymore. Isn't that swell? Well, you're getting in the 8.5 cents that you're charging me. I'm not getting any relief from you not having to read the meter, so you automatically just allowed them to double dip for $36 a month. They're getting it with the rate, base rate, and then you're putting in a smart meter. They don't have to read that meter, so they don't have that $36 a month expense. Now they're getting it twice. And then when somebody says, I really don't want a smart meter, and they go, good, if we have to come out and read it, it's a $36 again. That allows them to triple dip. And that is a hardship as far as I'm concerned, because you're actually paying for that three times. You're paying for it twice, either way you look at it, but you're not getting credit for them not having to do that function. And that's the part that I have a real tough time swallowing. That, you know, hey, I don't want that smart meter, and it's basically, doesn't have really anything to do with the cost of reading a meter, because that's already been covered. It is punishment for not getting a smart meter, for not playing along with the big guys with the big guys' plan. I'm going to nail you $36 a month, and that's the part that I have an issue with. And I can't see the Public Utilities Commissioner allowing that to happen, but it did, and that's the part that I have a real tough time with. I think I like the fact that you want to go ahead and do this. The fine should be for double and triple dipping, you know. But if you don't want that meter, you shouldn't have to pay that $36. And I think where we've got this is it becomes a hardship on certain people, whether it's a hardship financial, whether you can really afford it or not. If you think you can really afford it and it doesn't bother you to pay $36 a month, you don't fill out the paperwork and go after the fine. Simple as that. But if you do fill out the paperwork and go after the fine, then the county needs to stand behind that. And our ordinance says, if all this pans out and you cross all these I's and run the 100 yards, you're going to get 7 points.
Well, but that's our argument in court, I think, mm-hmm. more than our how
they're
do
here.
We implement
that's what we're
the
yeah.
rubber and road yeah. quotient right here.
But this isn't the end of this. I mean,
no,
you know,
but this is how we implement our ordinance.
Do you have the claim form created already?
No.
I'm still working on that.
So, generally speaking, we would want to give you some feedback to get something going as soon as possible.
Yes.
Do you guys, in general, approve to have rules in place and you want to individually get responses to legal teams so they can implement those? Or do you want to wait until they're implemented to put the rules in place?
Well, I don't wish to send Counsel Hicks up there, legal Counsel Hicks up there, unarmed. You know, I'm assuming you want to take this up north?
No, I don't need that. For
you don't need that? Okay, all right.
Yeah, no. It's strictly talking about change of venue.
this
firm. Okay, all right. If you're just going to talk change of venue, I would like time to review this, and I'd also like time to... There was a... I think we all got it, a deal before the Public Utilities Commissioner, a response from PP&L?
I have not received that.
It was just you. Well, I know you did.
I did, yes.
I don't know that the other board members did, however.
Okay, well, and I gave it to you, so
I'll leave it
up to you to respond to that. I mean, to distribute that as you see fit.
I think we did that last week, actually. If we're talking about that same document, because the one that you received was what I provided to the board last week.
Correct, okay.
In the executive
session. And I would like to shuffle this deck of cards with this, because I think they had a different deal, which I still had a question about. It's still $36 to read the meter. And no matter how they split it up, but then it added 7.5%. And that, I go, gosh, where does it stop? It just keeps on and on and on and building and building and building. And I struggle with that.
Yes.
So.
Well, and we're not just saying it's only hardship is the only way. There's also excessive or arbitrary fee. Is hardship the only argument for a customer?
Economic hardship.
Is the only argument?
Yes. Economic development has long been considered a province of local jurisdictions. And, of course, the home rule provisions of the state constitution are going to be debated during the course of this lawsuit that's currently underway. And so combining that long-standing doctrine with the express statutory prohibition against the PUC, imposing its upgrade, using economic bias within the equipment upgrade process. So that's where we wound up with the language of the ordinance, the express prohibition of economic hardship.
Okay.
We're not allowed to set rates. PUC sets the rate.
Well, I think you should probably just talk to me about that if you don't mind.
Let me talk to legal counsel Hicks.
Sounds like a good idea.
Okay, so any feedback that you have, please give it to Councillor Hicks's office, and then they'll bring it back, and we can discuss. In the meantime, the rules will not be implemented until we get it ironed out.
Yes.
And this doesn't throw a wrench in your gears for this party. I'm okay.
Delays our constituents from starting tomorrow or today. But their arguments because we don't have rules in place.
Yeah, no. So the ordinance actually provides for March 1st.
Okay. That's
when the county is going to send the list of names over to Pacific Power.
Gotcha.
Bless you.
Okay.
So we're really not seeing delay. But it does cut down, you know, this is now the period of time between the ordinance goes effective and March 1st when the county is capable of collecting those applications.
Okay.
And clarifying the rules around it.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
Good. Future, thank you.
Item number 8 is the May election timeline.
Yeah, so one sentence here is, do you want to add anything to the May election? If so, we can work up a timeline. We haven't done it yet. We wanted to check in with the board first before undertaking that effort.
So the commissioners have the ability to put advisory questions on the May and November ballots.
And it'd probably just be advisory question. We don't have anything pending we want to put on the ballot.
We could, but we don't have anything. So if you'd like to create something right now, this would be a fun time.
How far are we along on the lodging tax, county lodging?
I wrote that like a year and a half ago. And
we've had a conversation, Mr. Bowen, John Bowen, and Arthur, and myself, and Sarah, about transient room tax, lodging tax.
Well, and I had asked months ago for it to be put forward through Julie asking. I had asked her to bring it to you guys to get it back in the thing, and it didn't. She was taking it to CEDC instead. So I wanted to discuss it because there's... essentially, in the time frame of sooner than later. So I would like to see that on an agenda item.
Yeah, and when is our deadline for something on the May ballot?
Okay, so in light of the transient lodging tax question, we'll work up that deadline.
Yeah, I would like, time-wise,
looking at...
Beg your pardon?
not that far away.
We need to move
March, April, May.
Fast. No.
March, because our charter.
We have a sooner deadline. 30,
if we have an earlier deadline because the charter, because it's not a primary election.
Okay.
So when is that deadline? What date? Yesterday?
It's not been done yet because I was going to put the timeline together, but only if you thought you might need it.
I also was construing an advisory question as well.
Okay, I would. Looking at what's coming up in the future, we're probably looking at, from the city side, a fire district.
In November.
In November, correct?
Right.
And what all we're doing in November, I would just as soon us stay away from that. And I don't want the voter to get the idea we'll just go down, no, because there'll be numerous tax proposals on that November ballot. I would rather see us, and there's a good possibility.
So let's ask that it get an agenda item.
Say let's do an agenda item. We'll discuss
on the timeline
sooner rather than later.
The possibility of putting the
transient lodging tax
on there. If it's possible or not.
Like I say, it's written as far as I'm concerned. It was just a matter of, are you going to do it? Okay, I think I even gave the paper a copy at one point. But
well, we discussed, when we had our meeting the other day, we discussed, you know, what it should be, how much it should be, and should it be countywide, including the city, and so on and so forth, and rates. So let's get that discussion. I think that's the
put
best
thing. Put on for 1 week from today?
Yes.
What are we putting on? The timeline? Or
both.
Transient lodging?
Both. And potentially an advisory question?
Well, yeah, related to fire service and...
Should we do something along with Jeanne Mills?
Jeanne Miles.
Jeanne Miles. Her letter that stated, you know, that we would actively put out fires in Josephine County.
So regardless, that's a topic coming up shortly.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let's get there on the agenda so we can talk about that.
Okay.
It's not on the agenda, but I was going to... May election timeline, we do know we want that one. There was a suggestion that we talk about what fire service levels in the county we look at is in an advisory question format.
Okay.
That was kind of something that needed to be developed. Is there anything else on the May election timeline you would be wanting to look at?
Is everyone going to be here 1 week from today?
Yes.
I don't know.
I think so. And, well, couldn't the timeline thing just be a memo or an email? It's not content. Related, you can just tell us the time.
We're at the point that we need to start talking content.
Right. Well, it'd be nice to know when the timeline was.
We usually do a timeline with everything in it.
Yeah, back date.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly.
Right, but I'm saying you can send that information without being at a meeting, too.
Yes.
Right, because it's not content-based or whatever. It doesn't have meat in it. You're just answering a question about how far the timeline is.
Let's talk about that.
Right.
Well, yeah, we'll send you a copy.
And Wendy tells me 1 week from today I'll be with Bobette and
maybe up north.
Subcommittee up north. But I think
still got to do it.
Still got to do it. Maybe if there's two commissioners here, I don't need to be here.
We probably need to get used to commissioners.
Do we have
Young
your support moving forward on?
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
There we go.
You have my support in that way.
We had talked about a level of 3%. As if you want anything else, I would suggest you talk to Wally offline from here to give him what your opinion is so he can bring that to us next week.
Okay,
so next up on the agenda is proposed fire district. And this is a result of the city-county meeting yesterday where they asked the county to support putting on the ballot in November a city-wide plus... any homes in the urban growth boundary that have signed service annexation agreements to be on a fire district. I have been in conversations with Councillor Hicks and staff about whether that is allowed or not, and kind of what steps and all that. So we wanted to make sure. They asked us to make a decision yesterday. We said we can't.
Correct.
This is the soonest we would be able to have that discussion as a board. So a couple things we have to discuss if it's even allowable under the rural fire protection laws, a fire protection district, rural fire protection district, ORSs, and also what would be required of us asking of the city in order to do this, I guess is probably appropriate to talk about, right?
Yeah, I consider it appropriate. Yeah. I mean, perfectly lawful. So, for example, the library district had to submit a feasibility study. We have, or have we provided that over to them, or we're on the verge of doing so?
I'm in the middle of getting that.
Okay, so we're going to provide that to the city. It does seem to make sense to inform the board as to the parameters of this proposal to expect a feasibility study from the city. And again, the library has done such a thing before theirs, and so that would seem to be an appropriate
well, I think they have that
expectation,
yeah.
yes. Yeah. So it is at the board's determination in terms of whether to put this forward to a ballot. There's a whole statutory construct surrounding how a district is created, whether it be created by the board, by the voters, or whether it be a petition or by board action. And so only after following through with all the statutory expectations can a district actually be formed. And so it's not as though you can sit here today at the table and move and second and vote for a district. And so we can get the particulars of that to you here in the short term. In the meantime, so my office and Mark Bartholomew's office have directly been engaging, and we're going to provide them the information that we have regarding the library district, so that'll give them a starting point on what's the expectations from the county.
What did and they want? They're shooting for November.
I guess. I mean, I had.
That's what they said in the meeting yesterday.
Right.
Okay.
So we'd want to know what our timeline is, if we could even do it in that time frame, or not.
Are they all they asking for us to do is refer it to the voter?
There's no hall.
I wasn't at the meeting.
That's all. Okay. So they are asking us to refer to the voter, but in order for us to do that, there are several steps that have to be taken, including having public hearings and different things of declaratory statements by the board. There's a whole process of due order, and none of the information that we would need to do any of that stuff has been provided by the city. So generally speaking, if they were required to do a petition where they submit to the clerk's office that they're going to have a petition and they go gather signatures to put something on the ballot, there's this whole list of things they have to provide to do that petition, and including an economic feasibility study. The problem is if they just push it to us and say, you do it, we still need all that information that would have been in that petition in order for us to do our due diligence. And so I would even recommend that if we make any attempt, that we ask and require the city to provide everything that they would have to as if they were gathering signatures, so that there's no information missed in this process, because it will be months long on our behalf. There's things that probably should have already been in place that they were getting us before now, because we're going to be
crunched.
Correct.
Yeah.
And the library district worked on theirs for 3 years before bringing it to us.
Yep. And the city's been working on theirs, but they took a break. So they have all that information. It's just a matter of organizing it, I think.
Okay.
Yep.
I was just going to say the biggest difference, what they're asking is that you guys initiate the formation. Everything else is the same. It's just right. How
the requirements
how start
behind
out.
It are the same. Okay.
Yeah.
Who initiates?
Yes. And so it would be a board order initiating it. But in order to make the order, we have none of the information that we need for the order. They have to give it.
There's findings that the board must make.
Later on.
Yeah.
If they submitted the petition application, not requiring them to submit it to the clerk's office, but just the application with all that information, then you can develop the order that we would need to do to start the process.
We can
and then
let them
initiate.
Know what they would need, because they're also going to need a resolution from the city. It's another thing they need.
Right, and I think the board is friendly to their request. It's just a matter of can we comply with the timeline? Mm. How much effort does it take?
I really don't know what I think about their whole process. I just know that it's a lot of work for our staff. It's not something that's just in August like they put on their display. It's months of work on behalf of creating a district.
But didn't you say we could throw that into their
on their court and say, you do all the stuff that we're, that you want us to do?
There's stuff that we can't give up our obligation to do.
Okay.
So it's going to be a lot of work for us no matter what, but to do it easier is them providing all the information required so we can get our stuff done, but it's still work.
Right.
And you have to hold a couple of hearings, so there's no actual done deal because you have to make findings that, in fact, the area would be benefited by the district services. So there's things that you're going to have to look at all along the way in public hearings.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And at no point should we be making an assumption of how we feel about any of those topics prior to a hearing occurring. Yeah. So that that decision's made in a hearing after evidence is presented and testimony is received.
But we've got to do that sooner rather than later.
And we can't do any of it without the information that they need to provide us.
Yeah, they're right. Really strict timelines. We can, again, that will be another time.
Tough one to keep a timeline, to make the timeline?
No.
We have just documenting so we know what their deadlines are. Yeah.
Just labor intensive?
In this case, it's not as labor intensive because we've done it before. So we just pull it up.
Right.
I mean, we have to kind of check and make sure statutes haven't changed. But other than that, what we've usually told people is if you have to get signatures, you need a year. If you don't have to get signatures because the board's going to initiate, probably good in 6 months. So you're kind of...
Or they're almost there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
do we need to make some sort of decision as a board to move forward with the city as partners in this, or are we going to have them do some work and then come back and go, no, we don't like it, thanks for starting, but you know what I mean?
The very first order of the board initiates the process, and in order to have that, even for you to consider that order, we have to get information from them. That's what we're going to ask them for. The email I'm sending on.
And I'm assuming we have supplied them with what their requirements
are.
I don't want to come back and they go, well, you never told us.
I've probably given it to them three times, but I'll give it to Mark again.
Okay. All right. Let's hit the ball back over the net.
They were given it back in November as well.
Let's hit it over there again.
And
go from there. That there is a requirement from them before we can even start the process here, is what you're telling me.
Exactly.
Okay, then let's get.
But we'll put together a timeline.
Sooner they.
And for our use.
Yes,
for our use. For the board's use.
Not for something the city to rely upon.
Okay, all right.
Okay.
Okay. Put it this way, this commissioner is interested in their proposal.
Okay.
I think we're obligated to respond because an entity is asking us to do a district.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Regardless of how we individually feel about it, we're obligated to respond to the request. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Consider it.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
All right.
Okay, so on that note, we're going to move on to the next item, which is additional subjects matters from commissioners.
No.
I just had the stuff that came in from Jackson County this afternoon, the ordinance they passed. Has the county passed any of these similar ordinances?
No, I just gave copies to Councilor Hicks and each of you so that we can see if we want to do that.
Right.
Yes, and I haven't read it yet. So
right. I've only started reading it, but...
No, I just asked that you guys be copied on them so that we can see if we want to pursue any of this in a timely manner.
Well, in part of the speaking on this subject in one voice, I think we should say something. If it's not very similar.
True.
Yeah.
So Thursday has a hiccup. So one of the agenda items earlier today, I saw our agenda for the Thursday admin meeting. While sitting here, I've been reminded I have been subpoenaed to testify in a court case on Thursday. I have to be there at 9 a.m. And this is related to my former employment as a parole officer. This case is related to me supervising a case that is dealing with something. It's a guardianship case. So I've been subpoenaed to testify, so I will not be available for the admin meeting Thursday at 9 a.m., and Commissioner DeYoung is not going to be here. So we need to adjust our admin schedule for Thursday to see if either we can move it to actually, I have no idea how long my obligation in court is. But I will, as soon as we're done with this meeting, I'll try to find out. But if we need to try to move admin to the afternoon to handle items or not. But one of those items I saw on there was a discussion about the IRAT proposal, which is the Immediate Response Action Team program. And John Pappas, with our Illinois Valley Airport Advisory Board, met with Commissioner DeYoung this week and asked for a letter of support from our board as they go speak with congressional level and state level as far as getting support for this program. They would like support from us. They wanted to do a presentation on Thursday, of which two of us are not going to be here, so we need to reschedule that presentation. But I said that I'd be willing to bring up the support letter now. And I don't know how much you know about this program, Darren, because both Dan and I have received numerous emails about it that we've also forwarded Counselor Hicks. I mean, yes. It's something that's been in the works for a little bit, so we've heard about it already.
I read some two-page document that you either forwarded or that guy gave me directly.
Okay. And this is John right here, by the way.
That was him.
Got a haircut.
So looks just like
I don't recognize him.
He's not wearing his hat. So what I'd like to propose is that we do draft a support letter and that John can work with either Dan or myself in getting the items that we need to have in that letter and then that we can give that support letter for the proposal. As far as the basic tenet of we want fires put out as quickly as possible with any amount of resources available. And so this being a proposal that can be pursued and we can see that we're supporting the quick suppression of fire in our community. So even if it was a simple letter like that, it could be support.
Supporting it in concept, but not monetarily yet.
Correct. Quick and complete suppression of the fire where possible.
Yeah. So if you, I mean, what are your thoughts on if we can draft a letter? If you can work with John to get a letter.
Yeah, I'm willing.
Okay.
Yep. Okay. I'm supportive.
All right. So. Are we saying Dan, but you're leaving, or do you want to be the point person to get that letter going, or do you want me to work on the letter? What would you like?
Why don't you work on the letter, because I'm going to be gone for 2 days, and then I'll be back on Friday.
I'm trying to, settlement is,
trying to do, and I'm
your airport's on fire, so how do we look at both?
I think we'll come up with a letter, and we're going to just redline it or whatever, but you're a lot better at wordsmithing than I am.
I would not say that. But
I'm staying out of it.
All right, so we support me working with John to get a letter. We'll bring it back to you guys before we sign it.
Sounds good.
Or just pass it around when we get it done. Okay.
Great.
Thank you
very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
And I brought another document that defines what we're looking at.
Okay.
Okay.
Each party looking at it. You can look through that. That's what we need in a letter. And the support letter is very important. Which we're going to do now, that's great. I just got a call from Chief Hoke. He's setting up meetings already. We're moving forward with this and with the support letter.
Good.
It's going to happen.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Pappas.
We're going to
get
be
this
successful.
Ball rolling.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Pappas.
Okay, it is time for us to move into executive session. So it is currently 3:21 p.m. The Board of Commissioners will now meet in executive session for the following agenda items. Item 11A is Courthouse Security Plan under ORS 192.6602F and ORS 192.34523. Item 11B is Dog Control Board versus Tim Maxwell, ORS 192.660H. I don't know if I have a potential conflict of interest of just, I don't think I do on the Maxwell one, but I've just known their family my whole life.
Okay.
His dad was a teacher. Worked with him in church sitting situation before, but no current relationship other than acquaintance and haven't seen him in a couple years, but I just want to make sure I'm...
Thank you.
Okay, and so approved representatives of the news media and designated staff shall be allowed to attend the executive session. All other members of the audience are asked to leave the room. Approved representatives of the news media are specifically directed not to report on or otherwise disclose any of the deliberations or anything said about these subjects during the executive session, except to state the general subject of the session as previously announced. No decision may be made in executive session. At the end of the executive session, we will return to open session and welcome the audience back into the room. The recorder will now be turned off at 3:22 p.m.
Yeah.
It's 4:10 p.m. We're back in general session from executive session. Item 11A, courthouse security plan. We discussed that, and staff is going to go forward with those discussions. And item 11B, we're recommending go to a hearing.
Yes.
Okay. Is there item 12, is additional matters and subjects from commissioners, and any other item that should be brought before legal?
No.
No.
Okay, seeing none, we're adjourned at 4:10 p.m.